So we know from the famous Gemara in Yuma, where there's a discussion of various Rabbonim, Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and Rabbi Yishmael, who are walking and discussing the issue of how we know that you can transgress Shabbos, in order to save a life. And each one advances a different opinion as to how we know this. And there are two which are quoted by the Poskim regularly. One of them is the view of Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh, who says, V'shamru b'nei Yisrael as a Shabbos. The Jews shall keep the Shabbos. Amra Torah, the Torah said, Chalel olav Shabbos achas. Desecrate one Shabbos, Kadeshi Yishmor Shabbosos harbe, so that he shall keep many Shabboses. If a guy is in danger of losing his life, and what that means is to transgress Shabbos this time to save his life, well, it's a cost-benefit analysis. Okay? The loss is one Shabbos, the benefit is many Shabboses. So, he says you save his life. Rabbi Yehuda says, in the name of Shmuel, Shmuel says, had I been there, Ihavai Hasam, had I been there, I would have said, Didi Adifami Didhu, my source for this idea is better than all of yours. Right? Superior to all of them, because all of them have a kasha on them, except for Shmuel. Shmuel says, he quotes a pasuk in Vayikra Yudches, which says, these are the mitzvahs, the chukim, the mishpatim, these are the statutes, the laws, the judgments, Asheyasa oisam ha'odom, that a person should do, v'chai bahem, and live by them. So the Torah says, you shall do them and live by them. And Shmuel says, v'lo sheyomus bahem, and don't die by them, meaning that the laws of the Torah were given in order to live by them. Implication is, don't die as a result. So if there's a person's got some rare disorder, it's Yom Kippur, and it falls on Shabbos, and the doctor says this guy needs roast suckling pig freshly done today in order to survive. I have not discovered this disease, although I'm doing much research on it. So he would be not only allowed but obligated to eat the roast suckling pig shechted and roasted on Shabbos that falls on Yom Kippur in order to live. And he would say a brocha on it too. So v'chai bahem, life takes precedence. Now it's interesting, if you look in the Bir Halacha that I have quoted, he is talking about a statement in the Shulchan Aruch that says the following. A person, God forbid, is buried under a building collapses, the rescuers find someone partially buried under the building, it's on Shabbos, and the doctor, they uncover his face, the doctor determines this guy is still breathing, he's alive. So, however, the doctor says he'll only live for a short time. He won't make it to next Shabbos. He might live for a half an hour. Are you allowed to transgress Shabbos to continue uncovering the building in order to save the guy's life? The answer is yes, even though it's temporary. Now, this would seem to contradict the idea that the source of transgress one Shabbos so that he'll keep many. He's not going to keep many Shabboses. He'll be alive for half an hour maybe. He won't keep any Shabboses. So the Meiri, Bir Halacha quotes, the Meiri says, yeah, but it doesn't mean that he'll keep another Shabbos literally. What it means is maybe he'll regain consciousness for a second, and in that moment he will do teshuvah, repentance. And in one moment of teshuvah, of repentance, the person can redeem his entire life. So the Meiri says. So therefore, transgress Shabbos so that even for one moment, he'll live. Mishnah Brura, the Bir Halacha, Chafetz Chaim comes along and says, the Meiri is only saying that to make it easier for you to understand. But in truth, the Halacha is that even if the guy will not regain consciousness, you should still transgress Shabbos to save his life. In other words, the Chafetz Chaim says, the Meiri is just l'saber esa oizen, to make this a little easier to hear. But he says, in reality, our calculation is not that he'll be able to do a mitzvah, or he'll be able to keep Shabbos, but or do tshuva. Our calculation is that life is more important than Shabbos, even if it's temporary life. I don't know if there are some people who didn't get it. If you want this, just pass them towards the back there.
There's a couple over here.
They're on the desk.
They're on the white.
Oh, on the desk.
Oh, sorry.
It appears, at least from the Mishnah Brura, and this is the halacha, that it's nothing, that it doesn't require that the person do any further mitzvahs, it doesn't require the person be conscious, it doesn't require the person do tshuva, it doesn't require that he keep further Shabbases. We will transgress Shabbos to save even chaye shor, temporary life, even without consciousness. And presumably that is based on the source that says v'chai b'hem, live by them and not die by them. That would appear to be that's very clear halacha, and we know the Shulchan Aruch, for example, says if a person is, God forbid, in distress on Shabbos and he needs some type of medication, 10 people jump into their cars. Shulchan Aruch does not mention the car, but the 10 people jump into their cars and they all transgress Shabbos in order to go and get the medication. One guy is faster than the others. He comes back with the medication, saves his life. All of them have done a great mitzvah. None of them require any type of repentance. Oh, you know what? I jumped into the car and I was Mechal Shabbos and I didn't do anything. No, each one of them has done the correct thing. And not only that, but we actually specifically, assuming there's no delay, would actually have an adult Jew do this, even if there is a non-Jew there or a child there, because we don't want people to think that, oh, you can only transgress Shabbos to save life if it's a child who's not obligated in the mitzvahs, or a non-Jew who's not obligated in Shabbos. No! Right? We would have the greatest, right? We want to illustrate that life takes precedence. So now, if this is true, and by the way, again, I it's important to point out, this is even true if the person who is in danger was negligent. Even if the person in danger is a complete idiot, right, and he did something which is absolutely dangerous, which he was warned against, and he did this deliberately, with complete disregard for his life, you'd still transgress Shabbat, it's not transgression, but you'd still do whatever is necessary on Shabbat to save his life. And one step further, even if the guy tried to kill himself, he attempted suicide on Shabbos, and the only way I can save his life is by chilul Shabbos, by desecrating Shabbos, I am obligated to do so. So the idea of saving life on Shabbos is, even if, again, even if it's temporary life, even if it's unconscious, where he will not do tshuva or keep any other Shabboses, even if he was negligent, even if he was a complete moron, right, even if he tried to commit suicide, I am still obligated to save his life on Shabbos. Now, if that is so, we have a bit of a question. The Sifri, fairly famous Sifri, I've quoted here, Reb Shimon says, it compares the Egyptians and the Edomim to the Ammonim and the Moavim. So with the Egyptians and the Edomim, we actually eventually accept them as converts after 3 generations. And the Torah explicitly says, "Lo tesa'ev Mitzri," do not reject the Egyptian. And you have to accept them if they want to convert. But when it comes to a Moabite or an Ammoni, at least the men, we don't accept them as converts. What is the distinction between the Egyptians, who were enemies of ours, Egypt and Edom, Mitzrayim and Edom enemies, Moab, also enemies? Why do we consider Moab a worse enemy than Egypt? So the Sifri says, why? He says, the Egyptians tried to kill us. That's bad. No question about that. But he says, the Moabites tried to cause us to sin, which is worse. Type of interesting. And it says, right, because one who tries to kill him, ein motzia min ha'olam hazeh, motzia ela min ha'olam hazeh, the one who tries to kill someone, and even if they succeed, only extracts the person from this world. But one who succeeds in getting someone to sin, he causes him to lose not only this world, but the world to come. And so consequently, it is much worse, and hence we treat them much worse. So now let's apply that, kal v'chomer. If I am allowed to transgress Shabbos to save someone from dying, then should I be allowed to save someone, transgress Shabbos, to save someone from sinning? Right? Would it be correct to apply this kal v'chomer a fortiori? How much more so if saving someone's life is okay? It's okay to do whatever you need on Shabbos. So we'll see that it's not as simple. The Gemara in Shabbos says the following. It says Rav Bibi asked upon hitpik paspatanor hitiru lo doisa kodesh yavel chiv chatas alo hitiru. Okay, just to explain something. Anyone been to the Bukharan Shuk in Jerusalem? The Bukharian market in Jerusalem? So you're familiar with the Lafa Bakery? The best Lafa in the world, right? There's an ancient Bukharian guy who literally dates back to Babylonian period of the Talmud, right? And he's got an oven, which is a classic oven of the type they had in the time of the Gemara. It's a round top, and there's an opening on the side. The fire is at the bottom. Now, how does he bake the bread? It says hidbik paspatana. What does hidbik mean? You stick the bread onto the oven. So what he does is he takes a piece of dough, slightly flattened. He puts it on a pillow, like a pillow. He puts his hand inside the hole and he sticks the dough to the curved wall of the inside wall of the oven. That's called hidbik pas betanur. Stuck the bread onto the oven. Okay. Now, you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos, obviously. That's baking, one of the 39 malachas. You cannot do that on Shabbos. But you haven't actually technically transgressed Shabbos until the bread starts to bake. So if you would stick it in and immediately take it out, you haven't transgressed. So he sticks it in the... Now, also, again, another thing. You may have noticed when he takes it out, next time you're in Israel, you must go to the Bukharan Shuk and buy pitta from this guy. It's unbelievable, right? So taking it off the oven is also a level of skill involved. Right, he's got a pair of tongs and he takes it off because you have to be able to take it off without the dough sticking to the wall and without the thing falling into the fire. I imagine it's a skill. The Gemara says it's also a transgression of Shabbos to take the bread off the oven. Even though it's not a malacha, it's not one of the 39 prohibited activities, derabbanan, it's a rabbinic prohibition because it's a skilled activity involved in baking and it is prohibited. Okay, so now we got the sticking the bread on the oven and leaving it there to bake. Isser de oraisa, serious isser prohibition of the Torah of baking on Shabbos. Taking the bread out of the oven, isser de rabbonon, rabbinic prohibition of Shabbos as well. So here the Gemara asks the following. This guy stuck the bread in the oven, not the guy in Bukharan Shuk, he's a frum man, he wouldn't do that. But someone did this. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? He stuck it in the oven, he forgot it was Shabbos? So if he did they permit him to take it off before it baked? In other words, he stuck it in and he says, oh, it's Shabbos. So now he's confronted with the following. If he leaves it in, he's now transgressed an Isser Torah of cooking, baking on Shabbos. If he takes it out, Isser Drabonon of Redias Pas, of extracting bread from the oven. So the Gemara has a discussion, and certainly for himself, Tosfos points out, he's allowed to take it out. In other words, if he would ask the Rav, what should I do? The Rav would say, take it out, idiot. I mean, you put it in the oven. He wouldn't say idiot, probably. Right? But he'd say, you stuck the bread in the oven on Shabbos. Take it out before it bakes. But what about someone else? I am walking by, and I see it's Shabbos, and I see this guy has stuck bread in the oven. If I leave the bread in the oven, this guy will have transgressed an Isser of the Torah of baking on Shabbos. If he did it b'shoigeg, he must bring a korban chatas, sin offering. If he did it b'mezid, right, serious consequences. So either way, it's very serious consequences, an Isser d'oraisa. Am I allowed to take it out? Can I transgress an Isser d'rabbanon, a relatively light prohibition, in order to save this guy from transgressing a serious prohibition? What do you say? So the Gemara says, in a very famous statement, Maskif la Rav Sheshes, v'chi oimim loy la'odom chatei, kedei sheyizkeh chavercha? Do we tell a person sin, so that your friend will have merit? And no one seems to disagree with this. It seems that, of course we don't. We would never say, you should sin so the other guy has merit. In other words, if I'm walking by and I see this guy stick the bread in the oven, then and I ask a rabbi, can I take it off the oven? The rabbi would say, no, you shouldn't sin to save someone else. You could sin to save yourself, maybe you can do a lighter sin to save yourself from a more serious sin. But I cannot do a sin to save the other guy from a serious sin. Ein oimrim loy la'adam, we do not say to a person, chate, sin, kedei sheyizke chavercha. Now this would seem to be, let's say the guy was in danger of his life as a result of his negligence, his stupidity, or his deliberate attempt at suicide. Could I transgress Shabbat to save his life? Without doubt, of course I can. But I cannot do even an Issur Drabanon in order to save him from a serious Issur D'Oraisa of the Torah. Why is that so? So we'll see. The Tosfos, first of all, and other Rishonim discuss this at length. And we will see soon that there are numerous decisions. But it is clear, though, that generally you cannot sin to save someone else from a sin. Why? But there are exceptions. Just to have a look at the Tosfos. Tosfos asks an interesting question. It says in Eruvin, Hadam v'chol ma'arvin, Rebbe Sava, nichele l'chaver d'liavet yisura klila l'liavet amaretz yisura rabba. Interesting. Give you the case there. So in Israel, fruit from Israel, you must take truma and maser. You have to take tithes from fruit grown in Israel. You walk by in Costco, and it says, made in Israel, buy it, and take tithes. Okay? So I think it's a mitzvah to buy it, but certainly it's also a mitzvah to take tithes. Now, in general, let's say when you take maser from something, the thing that you take maser has got to be in front of you. I've got to take the maser and I've got to be in front of me. Let's say I forgot to take maser and I know that the bowl of fruit's at home and someone's going to take from that bowl of fruit. So I've got a piece of that fruit with me. I'm at work. So let's say I take a piece of that fruit and say this piece of fruit is maser on the bowl at home. Can I do that? So generally, I cannot do that. That's called shloi min ha-mukaf. Generally, the maaser has got to be in front of you when you do it. It works ex post facto, but I should not do that. Because it can end up with all types of problems, understandably. But let's say a Talmud Chochem, a Torah scholar, somehow his basket of fruit he gave to an Am Ha'aretz. An Am Ha'aretz means an ignoramus. It's interesting. Just parenthetically, Reb Chaim Vital explains the language Am Ha'aretz in his introduction to Shari Kedush, I forgot the name of the book, but in the introduction to one of his forum, Reb Chaim Vital says that Am Ha'aretz means, Am Ha'aretz literally means what? A person of the, or a nation of the ground. He says it's a person who's only concerned with matters of the Aretz. He has no concern with anything beyond the Aretz. Now, as the Aretz is the earth, his only concern is the material. That's why in Hebrew we call an ignoramus, meaning an amoretz, meaning he's of someone who has no concern for anything except the oretz, the physical land. Okay. So anyway, an amoretz generally probably won't take tithes from the food. So now the Torah scholar is a problem. He's given a basket of fruit to the ignoramus who's going to eat it without taking tithes. He has now the option of taking tithes, shaloi min amukaf, meaning it's not in front of him. Can he take tithes and transgress a minor prohibition of taking tithes, shaloi min amukaf, something that's not in front of him, in order to save the ignoramus from a serious prohibition of eating untithed food? What do you say? Based on the Gemara and Shabbos, what would you say? Certainly not. We don't say to a person, sin, to give merit to your friend. But the Gemara and Erevin, Tosfos points out, does say that. The Gemara and Erevin says, Nichale l'chaver d'liavid isura klila, it's acceptable to a scholar to do a light prohibition, v'lo liavid ama'aretz isura rabba. And so that the ignoramus will not do a serious prohibition. So now, in classic Tosfot dialectical style, he has posed a contradiction. The Gemara in Shabbos says, don't sin to save someone from a serious sin. Don't even do a light sin to save someone from a serious sin. The Gemara in Erevin says that the scholar is happy. I don't know if he's delighted, but nichale, it's acceptable to him to do a light sin to save the Amaoretz from a serious sin. So those appear to clash. So Tosfos gives, and the other Rishonim give a number of answers. I'm not going to read it in the Tosfos, but I'll tell you a couple of the answers. Number one, there's a serious distinction. What is the major distinction between the case in Shabbos and the case in Erevin? One obvious distinction is, who caused the sin in the case in Erevin? Who is the cause of the sin? No, in the case in Erevin with the Maser. The Talmid Chacham. He's the one who caused it. In the case of the baker, you're right, the baker causes sin. I, the innocent bystander, am not the cause of it. So to say that I should do a sin that I didn't cause, to save someone else from a sin that he caused, that we don't say. But let's say I, God forbid, am the cause of the sin. Okay, let's say the Talmud Chacham, assuming I am, right, or whoever it is, I caused the Avera, so then it's acceptable for me to do a minor Avera to save someone else from a serious Avera, which I caused. That would be one distinction. So this question is, did you cause it or not? That's distinction number one. The river, they quote the river, and they answer that, that there's a distinction between prevention and cure. In the case of the baker, are we preventing the sin from happening, or are we curing a sin that's already happened? He says there we are trying to cure, alleviate a problem which has already happened. He already stuck the bread in the oven. Some avera has been done. So now I am trying to cure the problem. In the case of the Talmud Chacham, who gives the basket of fruit to the Amaretz, has the avera happened yet? So in other words, the Rivos says we are more inclined to say, look, you can sin to prevent an Avera that has not yet happened. But to ameliorate an Avera which has already happened, that you cannot do. In the case of the baker, he's already done somewhat of an Avera. I mean, he stuck bread in the oven, for heaven's sakes. If he doesn't do anything, that's a serious Avera. So to prevent the consequences of that, that I cannot do. But to prevent an Avera from happening in the first place, as in the case of the Talmud Chacham, that the Rivos says, that's okay. A third answer, which is given in the Rishonim, it says it depends on the Avera and depends on the mitzvah. So, for example, they bring another case where Rabbi Eliezer went into a base medrash. There are only 9 men there. He walked in with his trusting servant, his slave, Canaanite. Now, freeing the Canaanite slave is actually an Isser Asse, it's a prohibition. Right? But if he frees him, what does he become? He becomes Jewish, right? So he has a conversion, right? Which means now you've got a minion. Right? So, I mean, it might be easier to get on the phone or get on your WhatsApp group and say, minion needed, right, 9:15. But they didn't have WhatsApp then, right? Shock, I don't know how they lived, right? So therefore, what he did was he freed the slave. So the Gemara says, how can he do that? It's an Avera, it's a sin for him to free his slave. And he's doing it so that others will have a merit. How does he do that? So there, Tosfos brings a different answer, which is, mitzvah rabbah, a great mitzvah, a major mitzvah, that you're allowed to do a minor Avera. What's a major mitzvah? First of all, something which affects the community. So now, a minion is a whole community. Or another example would be the case of there was a maidservant who had 2 owners. One freed her, one didn't. So she's like in this quasi status where she cannot have relations with a Jew because she's partially a maidservant. She cannot have relations with a slave because she's partially Jewish. So what do you do? So we actually force one of the owners to free her. Now, why do we do that? Because she is a michshol, meaning she is a stumbling block for the community. So therefore, the third distinction is a mitzvah, a great mitzvah, or a mitzvah that involves many people. We might be prepared to do a minor avera to allow that. And number five, is that when you too are part of the group, in the case of Eliezer, he was going to be part of the minyan. So now he is personally benefiting from this mitzvah, and it's also a group. So therefore, those two combined, that he'd be allowed to do that. So again, we see that there are, even though the Gemara says, Ein oimim la'odom, chate kadesh yiska chaverha, don't tell a person sin to save someone else, according to Tosfos and the Rishonim, there are numerous exceptions to this rule. As this rule is not quite as concrete as we may have thought. There are cases where you can sin to save someone else. What will be those cases? If you cause the sin, would be number one. And number two possibility, depends which answer you hold like. Number two, another possibility would be if you're preventing a sin from happening versus ameliorating the consequences of the sin. Number three would be if it's a huge mitzvah that you are doing here versus a minor avera. We have to see definition of what does it mean, mitzvah rabba, a huge mitzvah, a terrific mitzvah. Right.
Harry, yes, they said don't measure the serious and the light.
That is true. In other words, in Pirkei Avos, we are told, right, you should try not to, but that's true in general when you are in saying, I'm choosing only these mitzvahs which appear to be high-end mitzvahs, right? That you should not do. But if they clash, you are sometimes forced to make that type of decision. So, I forgot to mention, is this is an important one, when can you not do a sin to save someone else when the other person was a poshea, meaning he was negligent, yeah. If he was negligent, and now clearly, someone putting bread in the oven on Shabbos, is that negligent? Well, definitely. I mean, to forget that today is Shabbos, that's definitely negligence. To forget that something like cooking is prohibited on Shabbos, there's some negligence involved there. So he's negligent, he's a poshea, right? But let's say the Am Haaretz, the ignoramus, he gets a basket of fruit from a Talmud Chacham. It's Shlachmonis, the little kids of the rabbi bring him here. Here, daddy sent this. And he says, oh, thank you very much. Now, is he negligent? I mean, heaven's sakes, he got a basket of fruit from the rabbi. He doesn't think he can eat it? I mean, if he was a brisker, he couldn't eat it, right? Because as you know, maybe you're not familiar, but the Gemara says that only a chaver is trusted when it comes to taking tithes. What's a chaver? The Gemara says that someone who accepted upon himself in front of a beis din, in front of a court, that he would only eat chulin in a state of purity, and he's accepted upon himself to follow the directives of the beis din in all manners. So do we have anyone who technically is a chaver today?
No.
According to the briskers, technically not. So the story is told, I think it was the brisker Rav, when he went to his son to eat in Yerushalayim, so his son would serve him food, he would then take maser from what his son gave him. Why? He can't trust his son. His son's not a chaver, technically. And then, you know what his son would do? He'd take the maser that his father took and he'd eat it. Because he knew he took maser. So therefore, the tithes his father took were totally unnecessary, so he can eat them. To throw them out would be baltashkis, so you can't, right? So that's a classic brisker family, right? That's like unbelievable, right? Now, we are saved by the Chazon Ish. Rav Avram Yishai Karel, the Chazon Ish, said, look, he said, the Chaver today is someone who follows the directives of Torah Shebichsav and Baal Peh and raises his children to do so. Which means, pretty much, I would say that we're all Chaverim in that set. Kol Yisrael Chaverim, right? Chaverim Kol Yisrael. But the Briskers may disagree with that. But in any case, the case of the close parentheses, you can start listening again. But in the case of the Am Haaretz, he gets a basket of fruit from the local scholar. It's not unreasonable for him to think that it's kosher. And therefore, he's not a poshea, he's not negligent. So the Talmud Chacham could do a sin to save someone who is completely innocent in terms of the Avera. Whereas to save someone who is not deliberate, but he's not innocent, because there's a difference, right? Mazid is deliberate, full culpability. Oines is no culpability, completely beyond your control. Shoigeg, meaning negligent, there are degrees of that, right? But certainly, shoigeg is not the same as completely beyond your control. And we would say that the Am Haaretz, the ignoramus, is innocent here, whereas the baker the baker is not completely innocent because he stuck bread in the oven on Shabbos, and hence I would not be allowed to save him. So we have a number of distinctions. Now, if we look at the Beis Yosef, which I've quoted at the bottom. Oh, before I even... Okay, let's look at the Beis Yosef first. Beis Yosef was asked, he quotes the Rashba. The Rashba was asked about the following case. Mi sheshalcholoi b'Shabbos, a person was informed on Shabbos, sheotziyo bito b'chazaka mibesoi, al yidei Yisrael mashumad, that his daughter was kidnapped from his house by an apostate Jew, lotziya miklal Yisrael, to basically bring her up in another religion. So a terrible case, and unfortunately a case that happened to Jews not infrequently at different times in history. First of all, between 1391, the riots in the north of Spain when a lot of Jews converted to Christianity, and 1492 when the Jews were expelled, you had many cases of families where one spouse became a Christian and the other was a secret Jew, a crypto Jew. Okay. And there were the child custody battles were you know,
nasty.
It's a mild term, but yeah, I mean, you can imagine, right? The child Christian Jew, I mean, horrific stuff. We also know that from the famous Mortada case in Italy in the 19th century, what was the kid's name? Eduardo or Edgar?
Edgar,
who was very sick, little Jewish boy, very sick, and the Catholic maid basically told a priest that when he was sick, she baptized him in order to save his soul. When he got better, she told the priest that she'd done that, and the priest informed the church authorities, and they basically took the child from the home of his parents and raised him as a Christian. This, people around the world objected to this. Jews tried to lobby against it to no avail. The church controlled Italy at the time, and there was nothing that anyone could do, and little Edgar Mortado was brought up as a Christian, kidnapped from his parents' home. And so in the time of the Rashba, this is something that happened. And here the Rashba says, Im yasim l'derech pa'amav b'Shabbos, can the father set his feet on the way on Shabbos? Interesting expression, but it means that he would go out on Shabbos, pen yafchidua b'tishtameid, because they may scare her to the point that she will become an apostate herself. So what do you do? Im mutter lelech, are you allowed to save her? Now, let's try and analyze. Based on what we have learned until now, should you be allowed to save her or not? Based on what we learned until now. So for the father to transgress Shabbos is a sin. To save his daughter from becoming an apostate, apostasy, becoming Christian, I assume it's Christianity in this case. So is he allowed to do that? So we say, Ein oimrim la'odom chatei kadish yizgaver. We say, don't sin to save someone else. Why do you say yes?
She was not pasha.
Well, number one, according to one of the answers in Tosfos, you're both correct. She is not a pasha. The girl
kidnapped.
She was kidnapped. She was taken by force. She is innocent. She is not shogeg, negligent. She's certainly not mazid, deliberate. She is honest, beyond her control. That would be number one. Any other reasons that you might say it's okay?
Mitzvah
rabba. I mean, certainly saving someone from a lifetime of living as an apostate is certainly, compared to Chilul Shabbos, we would call it what? Mitzvah rabba. A great, great mitzvah. Interestingly, yes. Well, yeah, but we wouldn't apply the technicality of asei doichalois asei is only when the asei is being fulfilled at the exact moment that the lois asei is being transgressed. It wouldn't really apply in this case. The truth is, there are no cases at all where we actually apply asei doichalois asei. It's theoretical. The Gemara has a lot of discussion about it. There's not a single case where we actually do it. Every case where we actually use it, it's actually learnt from a posuk in some other way, whether it's Shatnas on Tzitzis, it's from the juxtaposition of the prohibition of Shatnas with Tzitzis. There are a whole bunch of, but it's interesting, but it wouldn't apply in this case because of that. That's one reason at least. Now, interestingly, the Rashba was against it. The Rashba goes through all of these cases, and he comes to the conclusion that that father may not do so. Interesting, the Rashba says why. He seems to accept the understanding that first answer we saw in Tosis. What was the first answer in Tosis?
Person caused it.
That who caused it? Did the if the Talmid Chacham, the scholar, caused the Avera, then he may transgress to save that Avera from happening. But if he was not the cause of it, he may not transgress. He says, Be'inyan acher, lo, but if it would be another case, no. Now, in this case, the father is not the one who caused whatever sin is happening to happen, so he cannot transgress to save the situation. Very, very rough. That type of suck, but I mean, I can't imagine the father would listen to that, you know, I mean, even if he asked. But interestingly, the Beis Yosef discusses, the Beis Yosef disagrees. And he feels that we can go like the other answers that we saw in the Rishonim, and certainly it will be appropriate to save his daughter. And this is how he paskens in the Shulchan Aruch. Have a look at the Shulchan Aruch on page 2. It's actually not the first Shulchan Aruch, the second. I put them in wrong order, I'm sorry. The second Shulchan Aruch, Shin Zayin. Misha Shalchuloi. One who is informed that his daughter was taken out of his house on Shabbos to extract her from the Jewish people, mitzvah lasum laderech pa'amav, it is a mitzvah for him to place his feet on the way, lishtadel bahat saloso, to try to save her, afilu yotza afilu chutzasharos parasos, he may go even beyond the tchum of Shabbos. One tchum of 2,000 amas is derabbanon, shalosh parsa, 3 parsa, 3 kilometers or whatever. I don't know exactly how much it is. That's already doraisa. And he can do that. V'ilobay, and if he doesn't, the Beis Yosef goes one point further, if he does not want to actually save her, based in goyzerin olov, the Beis Din says, you go and be mechalosh, get into your car and go and save her. So it's very clear, Beis Yosef, paskens, that in such a situation, we do say to sin to save the soul of his daughter, right? And however, here's the problem, okay? Here's the problem. I'm going to take questions later, but a brief question, yeah?
What about someone else trying to save
her? So that's a good question. If you look in the poskim there, the poskim say anyone could do this, right? So yeah, but it's a good question, right? So now, let's have a look at the Shulchan Aruch, Shin Chapches, which should be in reverse, but whatever, it doesn't matter. Have a look at the Ramah. It's like the second last line of that Shulchan Aruch. Misherot simla onso, shiavor avera gedoila. Someone who is being forced, probably by non-Jews, to transgress a serious avera. Ein mechalim alav hashabbos kedei lahatzilo. We do not transgress Shabbos in order to save such a person. We don't transgress Shabbos to save him. Interesting. Now, and he points to you to have a look at Shin Vav. Now, these two psakim seem to contradict each other. On the one hand, the Shulchan Aruch says what? Someone who is informed that his daughter is, God forbid, being taken out of his house to be brought up as an apostate, it's a mitzvah for him to transgress Shabbos to save her from apostasy. Whereas in Shin Chavches, what does the Ramah say? You know someone who is being forced to do a serious Avera on Shabbos, and I can save him by being Mechalel Shabbos, I should not do so. And what's the source that he points to?
Same
the Beis Yosef in the name of the Rashba. That seems to be very problematic. Excellent point, excellent point. So there are actually three or four different ways of resolving this issue. One way of resolving it is exactly what you said. That's the opinion of the Taz and the Magen Avraham and the Gro and also the Alter Rebbe and the Shulchan Aruch. Okay? They all say the following. To save someone from an Avera, a one-time sin, by being Mechalel Shabbos, that you cannot do. The guy's about to light up a Marlboro, right, on Shabbos, I do a spinning back kick and knock it out of his hands, right, beyond my capability at this point, but let's say, right, and you, that's actually wouldn't be a transgression of Shabbos, but whatever, you know, you do something to transgress Shabbos, you cannot transgress Shabbos to save someone from a one-time Aveira. On the other hand, this girl being taken away and raised as a Christian means a lifetime of chilul Shabbos, of not eating kosher, or whatever it is. I mean, and not to mention avodah zara, right? And so it's a lifetime. So clearly, they say the Ramah is not, the Shulchan Aruch is not contradicting himself. In the one place, the Shulchan Aruch is talking about a lifetime of apostasy. That is a mitzvah, rabba, serious mitzvah, compared to one time chilul Shabbos. On the other hand, a one-time aveira, one-time sin, he's about to eat lobster, right? And I turn up the flame to incinerate the lobster instead of cooking it nicely, right? Cannot do that. One time, you're right, he could eat lobster this week, it'd be at tzaddik next week, right? So, could be, I mean, unusual, but it could happen, right? So that would be one way of resolving it. Another way of resolving it is the lavush. The Levush says the following. The Levush says that really, in the case of the girl who's been taken, since the Averis that she will confront will be Averis in which there's an obligation of Yehareg Val Yavor, die rather than transgress, he's not being Mechalel Shabbos to save her from sin. What is he being Mechalel Shabbos to save her from? From death. Why? Because chances are, as a good Jewish girl, what will she do rather than transgress? She'll die. Or she'll kill herself or something. So in other words, he says, you cannot be Mechalel Shabbos to save someone from Aveira, but you can always be Mechalel Shabbos to save someone from death. And if it's one of the three Aveiras, serious Aveiras, which you have to die rather than transgress, idolatry, sexual immorality, murder, then chances are a Jew will kill himself or die rather than transgress, so you're actually saving them from death. That would be the Levush. And the third answer is the Bach, which I've quoted here, but the Bach says the following. He says, very, very simple. In the case of the girl who's been taken out, he says, when she is brought up that way and grows up that way, so it says the following. Just have a look at the Bach here. One second. Near Lafi, it's typed like in the middle of the Bach. Near Lafi Layasef, Tekshechoshishim Shiaf Chidua Lahamer, Viloi Pasha, Mutal Chalal Shabbos Kedah Hatzila, Me'ovan Avodazor de Mitzvah Rabba Shaini. He says, when we are worried that they're going to scare her to the point that she'll become an apostate and transgress, we would say avodah zarah, idolatry, is a mitzvah rabbah, and you can certainly transgress Shabbos to save her. We go like the Tosfos, not like the Rashba. Aval k'sheroisim la'ansoi she'avor aveira afil la'anso she'avor avodah zarah kevin de'enze aveira de'oines rachmana patre. But if they want to force a person to worship idols, even though halachically speaking he has to die rather than transgress, what's the halacha? Let's say he doesn't want to die, and he transgresses idolatry. They're holding a gun to his head, and they say, bow down, bring the sacrifice. And he does do that. What type of aveira is that? What would you call that aveira? Yes, there's a chil Hashem, but it's an oines. The Rambam says, at the end of the day, he was coerced. Granted, we would say he needs to have the courage to die rather than transgress, that is true, but the Rambam says, but at the end of the day, so he didn't have the courage. I mean, it's not like he deliberately worshipped, I would like to bow down to that statue, it looks very cool. Right, no, he didn't do that. Rather, a gun was held to his head, and they said, hey, Jew boy, right, bow down or you die, right? So that would be a huge difference, and that's the Bach's understanding. Now, it's interesting, the Mishnah Brura's conclusion is, if you have a look at the bottom of the page, he says, Urcha Hotziu Bito, his daughter, someone asked, is it only him or anyone? Mishabura says, Urcha de Milsa Nakat. That's just the usual situation, that's the father who would do this. V'hu adin acher, Rashai lechal Shabbos, k'delel atzilu b'yisugadol. The truth is, this would be true for anyone. Could do it. Someone asked about the, was the, right? So the Mishnah Berurah is now saying, the only reason it says father and daughter is because that's the norm. Right? That's the norm. That's the normal situation. But really, in halacha, anyone could do this. And, Ma Yisugadol, kol ze mayrei, shotziyu enyun mibesa ba'oynes. This is where this girl was taken out of the house, the oynes, against her will. Al Cain, he tirulol lasum l'derapam. That's why they permitted him to transgress Shabbos to save her. De kaimalan, because we have established im eina poshaya chayav lasis zurazuta kadesh loyasa chaver isur rabba. We rule that when the person who's doing the avera is not a poshaya, meaning not negligent in any way, then you are actually obligated to do a minor sin to save someone from a serious sin if that person didn't do it through negligence. And in this case, the daughter, let's say in Pasha, let's say the daughter left by herself. She left the house. She decides, fit her on the roof, right? She's going with the communist, whatever it was, right? That's a classic case. So Tevye is not allowed to be Mechal Shabbos to save her from that because there's Pshia. He says, because in that case, Ein Oimrim La'adam, Chatzei Kadesh Yizkeh Chavercha. Okay, so that is clear. So now we have a conclusion, which is that according to the Shulchan Aruch, Mishnah Berurah, it seems pretty clear that we paskin that two things. A, if there's no Pshia, meaning if it's an honest, the person's doing the Avera totally through beyond their control, no negligence, then you are allowed to do a lesser sin, i.e. Chilul Shabbos, right, in order to save her from a lifetime of apostasy. It's interesting, and by the way, there are cases where this actually happened. There's a story they tell, I don't remember who, I think it was possibly, maybe the Briskarov, I don't remember, but there were some kids who were saved from the Holocaust via Iran. It was Rabbi Herzog, and they... That's right, to the train station, right? Because these kids were going to be met by representatives of the Jewish agency, and they would be taken and raised on kibbutzim that were not religious, and which would mean that these children would live a lifetime of not keeping the Torah and the mitzvahs. So he ruled that he went to the train station, B, he sent a telegram, right, that it would be okay for representatives of Frum organizations to actually meet them at the train station, because even though they're Chilul Shabbos, again, it's a case the kids are honest, it's not their, not, they didn't make the choice, they're being led to a lifetime of not keeping the Torah mitzvahs, which is certainly a mitzvah rabbah, and so, therefore, it would be allowed. It's interesting, and here's an interesting question, why is it that we are so more machmir? Why are we more stringent about being mechalel Shabbos to save someone from an avera versus to save their life? If we establish beforehand, that's a question we didn't answer yet, that causing someone to sin is worse than killing them, to some degree, right? At least spiritually, right? So why are we so stringent? In other words, all of these conditions that I mentioned don't apply to saving someone's life. They only apply to saving someone's soul. Right? We clear on the question? Why are we so much more nitpicking about saving someone from avera? Oh, only if you cause it, only if they're an honest, only if it's a mitzvah rabbah, only if it's etc. Whereas when it comes to saving their life, even if you didn't cause it, even if they cause it liberally, etc. So there are a few approaches. Interesting, I asked for a sport, huh? So if so, that makes my question even better. Right. If my question is, so why aren't we more lenient about it? Okay. So there's a few possible answers. Right. Because you're saying b'chayvahem. You see. So some points can say that's where yishmor shabbos is harbe. We haven't rejected that, so that should still apply here. So why don't we say that that's also true? So a few answers. I asked Rav Dov Schwartzman about this, and so he said, what do you mean? If the guy is a poshaya, meaning he's negligent. He says, and you've saved him from the avera this time. How is that saving him? Right? What's to stop him from doing it again? Right? He says, if the guy's about to die and you save him, you've saved him. He's now alive. Right? He says, but in the case where you've prevented him from doing an avera that he would have done through negligence or deliberately by being mechalel Shabbos, it's not really a hatzala. It's not really saving him, right? Maybe if I was makariv him, you know, that would. But certainly, just saving him, stopping him from doing the avera this time, it's not really a hatzala in the same way that you're going from life to death. It's a 0-1, right? He would be dead. Now he's alive. A second possibility is Rav Scheinberg. Rav Scheinberg said that he said, you know what? He said, your body and your life is not your own. It belongs to God. You have no right to hurt yourself. You have no right to take your own life. He says, but, he says, God gave you free will. So in terms of Averus, whose authority is that? So God said, don't do Averus, but he gave you your soul is yours. In other words, you are a Baal Bechira. We have free will. If I choose to do a sin, Hashem doesn't necessarily stop me. If I choose to do a mitzvah, that's great. But he says, inasmuch as my spiritual self is in my own hands, so therefore no one else can do an Avera to save me if I decided to make a bad choice according to my free will. But if I decided to destroy God's property, i.e. my body, my life, then guess what? I can step in and save you. So Rav Scheinberg feels that that's the distinction. It's interesting. I just want to point out, I don't have it on the source sheet here, but there's a sefer called Chai Nefesh. And he is talking about in a Middle Eastern country, as you probably know, in the 19th century. So there are a lot of inroads made by various Westerners into the world of the Jews of the lands of Islam. There was the Allianz, which was the Jewish school system based in France, but there were also Christian missionaries who preyed upon Jews in these countries, in Iran and in other places. There were some places where the Jews were never even heard of Christianity, so they didn't even realize these people were necessarily missionaries. There are actually two documented cases I heard from Professor Tzadik of a missionary who was actually allowed to speak in a shul in Iran because the Rav didn't even realize it. Well, you know, he seems like he's talking about Tanakh. He's like, see, like, it was like just, they were so distant, they had no idea. So they used to have schools. The missionaries had schools. A lot of Jews lived in poverty. The missionary schools were free education. They provided food. They provided clothing. They provided medical care. They were often attached and associated with foreign governments, hence they were very often places that they could be safe from attacks by the Muslims because they were a little nervous about international powers. So, missionary comes and signs up the kid to the school. A lot of parents, not a lot, I don't know, I do not know statistics, but there were cases of parents who signed their kids up for missionary schools. So this person asked this author, am I allowed to go in undercover to these missionary schools to save kids? What does it mean going undercover? He's got to pretend to be a Christian. So that means no brachas, no talus, no tefillin, no yarmulke, clearly, right? Eating non-kosher, doing stuff on Shabbos, otherwise he'll be found out. Can he do that? He's infiltrating this organization. So that certainly is doing chatoim, he's certainly sinning, right? But it's kedei sheyizkeh chavercha. So the Chai Nefesh quotes Shulchan Aruch, and he says, these children are definitely honest. The children are definitely, it's not negligence on the part of the children. He says, not even clear to me that the parents are negligent. Because the parents just don't know, number one. And number two, poverty and oppression can push a person. It's almost like an oines as well. He says, so while these parents may have done the wrong thing, but you have to look at them in a sense as an oines. And certainly from the children's perspective, the children are definitely anusim. They're definitely forced circumstances beyond their control. He says, so for you, saving them is a mitzvah rabba, a great mitzvah. It's a lifetime of apostasy. It's not chad pa'amit, a one-shot avera, but it's a lifetime of averas. And number three, these children are anusim, so you'd be actually allowed to do that. So anyone wants to infiltrate a missionary group, right, you could do so, right, according to the, obviously you should ask your local Orthodox rabbi, but that is basically the rule. Yeah.
I read it in the early years of the Medina, the Pe'ilin, that they got sucking from the Chazon Ish along the same lines, to infiltrate the Jewish agency camps, if you will, to get kids out.
Right. I couldn't find the Chazon Ish in writing. The only thing I could find in writing here was the Chai Nefesh, but that's certainly true. Yeah.
Regarding your question, what's the distinction between, let's say, a physical
Right.
Perhaps the spiritual saving is different because that goes by the din of arbis. Why am I responsible for other Jews of Eretz? You have a din of arbis. So in the din of arbis, it may very well be, it's very different. For you to sin, it would be a very, very, how is an arev, but you're going to commit a crime to help the other person. So if you deal in that realm, you can understand maybe perhaps by the rabbanan, the arbis might be different, and the person's intent initially might also be different.
Although that cuts both ways, because if I'm an arev on the person's sin, that means it's my sin, and for my sin I can certainly save myself. So it's not clear that would be an answer.
But it would make a distinction at what was the person's intent originally. You know, you might maybe
I'm an arev. Although I'm an arev, even if he was, it could be. I have to think about that. But that's not. I think it cuts both ways. I think it would be equally. Both ways. Anyway, that's a little bit of an introduction to the subject. So in general, I would say don't sin to save a soul. But we see there are a lot of exceptions, and we see there are a lot of situations where it's not so. And certainly, we wouldn't want to be in such a situation. But if we are, at least you're informed enough to ask your local Orthodox rabbi what you should do. Okay, have a great day, and Guten Chodesh, and enjoy Yom HaTzmut coming up. By the way, if you want the other Makoros, which I was quoting from, you're welcome to.
Did you have them?
I've got them right here. It's from a book that I wrote, so I feel it's. I have no problem copying it. No copyright issues.